Hello, Catherine here. If you're listening to my podcast because you're a fan of wintering, the good news is that my new book, Enchantment, is available now. It's a book about how we can find a way to reconnect with a world that's sometimes hard to live in and even to find magic there. It's available in all good bookshops and please support your local indie if you can. For more information, you can go to catherine-may.com/enchantment. Happy reading.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Well, hi everyone. Welcome to the new season of the Wintering Sessions. We're ringing the changes a little bit this season. I'm going to talk to you a bit more because, I thought it would be nice to take you out with me. I'm on the beach at the moment. The tide's low. It's early afternoon. The sun's low already. I know you guys all love to hear the seagulls, but actually, out by the tide line, there's a couple who are feeding seagulls for reasons I don't fully understand, and the seagulls are mobbing them, so it's quite entertaining to watch. Anyway, rather them than me, they're vicious. The seagulls never cross a seagull. So I'm thinking this week really about how to make it through the winter. It's been really dark and cold, quite suddenly, very windy. Quite tricky to make it through those days without feeling a bit dreary. That's a really loud seagull. So I've been kind of doing my thing that I do to manage those dark, cold days. I've been getting ready for the rest of the season. I've started pickling a few things. And in fact, quite excitingly, I've made a fermented cranberry sauce ready for Christmas. It's looking very pretty in the jar. I don't know if it will taste disgusting. I'll let you know. I've also made membrillo, the kind of quince paste that goes really well with cheese. Turned out the wrong colour. I don't know why. Anyway, I did it. And with the peels and the cores of the quinces, I'm trying to make quince vinegar. All of which makes me sound like incredibly homely. And I should really tell you that my house is a complete tip amid all of this. Oh my God, the people being attacked by the seagulls are screaming now. I really don't know if I should rescue them. But yeah, I'm not a domestic goddess. But I do find it very soothing to cook, to kind of process things, you know, to bring in all those really beautiful winter vegetables. And to spend some time chopping them and simmering them and stewing them down. I don't know. I find it really comforting. So that's what I've been up to. And also, I keep reminding myself to drink in this light while it's here. The sun goes down so early and it comes up so late. The nights are really long now. So I'm reminding myself to get out, It's so easy to not leave my desk. I have a little note above my desk on a post-it note that says, go for a walk. And sometimes I remember to look at it and get out like this. Anyway, I want to tell you about this week's podcast. I'm talking to the brilliant Jen Pasteloff, who I think you'll love. She's so warm and wise. And we had what for me was a really interesting conversation about the link between shame and like the fear of not being understood, which she understands because of her deafness and I understand because of my autism. I think it's a different perspective on those things than maybe we hear sometimes. Anyway, I'm sure you'll let me know what you think. And I'll be pausing in the middle of the podcast to tell you about a new phase for this podcast, I suppose, which is that I'm starting a Patreon to support it. I'll tell you all about it in the middle, so please do listen up. It will definitely help us to carry on just doing interviews that are with such brilliant people. Anyway, enjoy. Jen, welcome to the Wintering Sessions. We tried for this one last time, but I have like a little introduction for you in mind because I've slightly altered this season of the podcast. I used to get people to talk about a time in their life when they'd wintered. And I kind of want to make it bigger this season. I want us to talk about how to survive winter and like just share what we know, like this amazing toolkit for life people have. I mean, I still want all the anecdotes, absolutely. But I just want it to get bigger in terms of what we're talking about. So I wanted to tell everyone, in case they haven't met you yet, that you are a writer, a public speaker, a yoga teacher, like a kind of master of the retreat. And I watch your retreats come past on Instagram and I think they look amazing.
You forgot weirdo.
I was going to slowly get around to you know, get it politely under the carpet later.
Yeah, you're British. I know. It's very we'll get that in later.
We're not very direct. But also, I mean, your book On Being Human is about so many different kind of winters, isn't it? I guess like it's about, you know, losing your father. It's about being deaf. It's about anxiety and depression and eating disorders and like being a waitress. But it's also about you as like a holder of people.
Ooh, I like that. I'm going to write that.
That's kind of what you are, isn't it? You are a holder of people and you are a very like heart on sleeve, no bullshit person. And that's what I'm saying by way of welcome. Like anyone who's those people is welcome to my podcast.
It's funny. Lately, I'm like, I wonder if my Prozac isn't as effective anymore because I notice usually I'm like emotionally constipated. I can't cry. And lately I well up. So it's a good thing. It's a good feeling.
I think that is a post-pandemic thing. I think I want to cry about everything since the pandemic.
Like, do you cry easily?
Kitten videos and I'm off right now.
I just, I miss it. It's like, it's not that I don't feel it. It's just part of the meds. It's it's fine. It's the, what do you want to call it? look, if I'm off, I can't function off them. So this is what I deal with, but I can't emote, but I miss that. I get envious when I see someone who can just cry so easily.
Yeah.
But being seen, I think, and I think you understand this, I've read your books, there's nothing like it to really feel like you're seen. And thank you. Because I feel like you see me, you get me. I think that's why we get on, even remember how we first, I don't know.
Yeah, we were doing an event. I can't remember what it was for, though. I was trying to think of that. I did so many events, but I remember talking to you, but I don't remember who we were.
First, okay, I was fangirling. Your book came out and blew up over here, Wintering, and it became like, I think unexpected, right? Like big, and it was just the timing, Of course, you planned the pandemic so that the book would work, and well done.
Sorry, everyone. Sorry about the pandemic.
And so I knew, and I was like, oh, like the book just called to me because, all my life I've been a depressive. All my life, has been like, oh, you're so serious. Oh, in winter, I've always felt like a darkness, you know, like I, and my birthday's in December. I just associate. And I was like, oh, this book is calling to me. And I read it and it's a poem. It's a poem. It's just so beautiful. And so of course I was, you know, in awe of you. And yeah, and I stalked you online. And then I got asked to do this a thing for One Grand Books. I think that's what it was, through the Soho House, which sounds fancy. So I was like, okay.
Yes. Yeah. It was really fancy because there were breakout rooms and stuff. It was really well organized. And yeah. And we got to have a chat while everyone was in a breakout room, which was really cool.
And it was short. And we started talking and I was like, oh, we need to talk more. And I also saw a lot of myself, you know, when I was reading The Wintering, the ways you speak about motherhood, and I'm like, oh man. And there's just a lot of, you know, you're definitely smarter than me and you, you have a cuter accent and I think you're more organized. But there's so many similarities that I, you know, it's such a feeling. I know it's tricky sometimes when we read someone's book and we're like, we'd be best friends. You know, I'm sure you get that all the time.
Yeah.
But when you read something and you go, oh, like, oh, I feel like I'm reading, I'm that feeling of being seen, right?
I think that really straightforward people are really attracted to each other. I think what I find very difficult about people is when they like dance around a subject and they don't want to talk about anything face on. And you're constantly wondering about like what you shouldn't say to them and what can't be mentioned and whatever. You and I are both people that are like, right, here we go. We're not going to do small talk. We're going to go straight into this. love that.
And I don't know. I just fell in love with you when I read your book. And then when I met you and I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, she's my people. And, you know, you're weird enough. Like, I'm so weird. And I say that so lovingly because it really, I don't trust anyone that's not weird. But you...
I only like weird people.
You own it. And like, you know, your memoir, which I believe you wrote before Wintering?
Yeah, before Wintering. Yeah, Electricity of Every Living Thing, yeah.
A reckoning with like... and owning it.
A reckoning with like the weirdnesses you know about and the weirdnesses that you can only perceive from other people's reaction to you. Like that's what it was like writing that book. But anyway, like my UK audience will be vomiting right now because we're being too nice to each other. So we've got to start being a bit meaner to each other. Yeah. They won't be able to handle this. So
I was going to say this before we recorded and I said, let me wait. So right now I'm alone with my son and he's actually being amazing, I think, because I told him I was talking to Santa later. But he still sleeps with me and my husband's not here. And so normally I sleep without my hearing aids in, which means I'm deaf. Now, I don't worry because my husband wakes me up. Human alarm clock. Thank you, Robert. But when he's not here, it's stressful because I have to sleep with my hearing aids in. And here's an aside, I just partnered with a hearing aid company, which is very exciting. Yeah, I got a free pair of hearing aids, which are like $7,000 and getting paid. God. I mean, I'm an influencer.
Oh, wow.
But it's really, it's a dream. So these are loud, but sleeping with them is not comfortable. Mm. It's like when my head touches something, there's feedback and...
Yeah, it's like sleeping with your glasses on or whatever.
Yeah, I never want to sleep with them. But sometimes I have to. If I'm alone, like in a hotel room, I have no way to wake up. The alarm clock, it streams through my hearing aids. So if I'm alone with Charlie, now he doesn't have school this week. So, you know, but I looked, I thought our thing was later and it was like 8 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, shit, you know, because I would have to sleep with my hearing aids. I mean, it's a whole thing, but it's not even that I couldn't get up. It's the anxiety around the idea of it, right?
I have exactly the same thing if I've got to get up, yeah. I will wake all night if I know I've got to get up. I mean, I get up early every morning, but if I know I've got to get up, I'll be awake every half an hour.
Well, I knew you did because like it'll be like 9 o'clock here. We're texting. I'm like, why is this wacko up so early in England? Like, but anyway, so I'm grateful that you switched it and I was able to sleep without my hearing aids, which makes it a lot easier to sleep. Yeah. Mm. So back to the wintering. I mean, I just love that. I love that as a verb too, I guess. Is that a verb? Yeah.
It's always good to invent a new verb. Why not? You know, let's just bring new verbs in. Like while we're there, let's talk about your deafness because it took you a long time to like realize and accept that, didn't it? What was going on in your mind like in those weeks and months when you knew really that you were deaf, but you didn't really want to go there. What was that like for you?
It's so great you're asking. I just, you know, I haven't been writing. I guess I've been in a wintering mode in that. And there's a lot of shame around that. And like, and I started writing again. And like, I wrote a piece yesterday. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but talking a lot about that, like these new hearing aids, Catherine, I could hear my son's voice. And I never heard it before. I mean, not, so it's really moving and it's bringing up a lot to think back on this. I created a movement. I sound so arrogant. I created a movement, folks, called shame loss. Instead of weight loss, let's talk shame loss. And the reason is because so much of my life was spent hiding from shame. I was so ashamed of my hearing loss. And what I want to say to people is do not try to rationalize shame. You know, because I've had people be like, I don't understand. Why would you be ashamed of that? It's like, shame isn't rational, okay? When I was a child, and I used to concentrate, color or write or whatever, I'd make this awful sound, like a droning noise. And people made fun of me, so I stopped doing it. I was like, ooh. Mm-hmm. And I never talked about it. As I got older, and I began to really notice my hearing was going, I was really terrified. And a few things happened. I thought, one, if I don't talk about it, if I don't acknowledge it, it'll go away. Friends listening, that doesn't happen.
No, deafness famously doesn't tend to go away.
No, but I still, as an adult, a grown-ass adult, I still grapple with that.
Yeah,
maybe if I avoid this, it'll just disappear, you know? Or so anyway, I would like, if I don't name it, it'll go away. And I was scared. Like, if it's like this now and I'm 20 or whatever, then what's it going to be like when I'm 40? And I thought I was broken. I already had a narrative in my head that I was a bad person because, you know, my dad died when I was 8 after I yelled, I hate you, to him. And he said, you're being bad. I said, I hate you. He dropped dead. I said, oh, it's my fault. I killed my father. Yeah. So I'm a bad person. And now I'm broken. You know, so there's all this stuff, right? So I'm in acting school in my early 20s. And that's when I really started to notice it. Now, it's funny, because if I think back at NYU, I always sat in the front. I always had to sit in the front. And I think, gosh, there's all these things I did. And like, people are always like, you don't pay attention. There's all a lifetime of stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, that's because I couldn't hear.
Those links that we make are so, I mean, it's so interesting to me because I think, you know, it's really similar to me discovering I was autistic and the idea that, oh, I can maybe just try covering this up for longer. I can cover up like my profound difference and the profound ways I'm struggling in life. And like when I read back Electricity now, I can see some of the stuff that I was still concealing in there that I didn't want to say at the time because I felt ashamed of it. And
I think that's really important, though. Now you can see it's really important that you documented that because that's how we see, like, I have chills right now. That's how we go, wow, that's growth. And wow, I'm human. Mm. And like other, and it gives other people, I don't know, you know, hope, right? Go, oh, look, I was still grappling with shame there.
Mm-mm. It's amazing. But sometimes you don't even realize you're ashamed. Like it's so ingrained and it's so, I feel like modern life is like a training ground for shame almost. Like everybody is ashamed of something. And it's rarely that they've murdered someone and the body's buried in their backyard. It's like they're ashamed because their feet look weird. Or, you know, like it's
that's
dark,
it, right? And that's why I say it's not logical. So don't even try. It's funny because as we're speaking, I'm like, oh, my next round of shame loss, usually it's like 3. I want you to be a guest. I pay you. I had Paulina Poroskova come in April with me. You know, she's a supermodel and talk about shame around aging and stuff. But I definitely, now that I'm talking to you, it's like about, you know, deafness and autism. And so I hope you'll say yes.
Of course I'll say yes.
Yeah, it's great. And it's really, it's generative, it's collaborative. It's really a beautiful, beautiful people who show up. In my 20s, you know, I was in acting class and I was like, oh my God, I started noticing like I couldn't hear. And I started panicking and again, denying it. And I remember one Thanksgiving in my 20s, I was at a friend's, we were doing like a Friendsgiving, whatever you call it. And in the States, like when you kind of get together with your friends and not your family. And my friends basically had an intervention with me.
Oh, wow.
They were like, you need to go to the audiologist, Jen. And I was crying, and they're like, we'll go with you. And I finally was like, okay. And then we're like, we never followed through. I blew it off. Yeah. And it kept getting worse and worse. And I just denied. Finally, after waitressing 13.5 years at the same joint, and I did the yoga teacher training. When I was in yoga teacher training and the teacher would say, like, close your eyes for this meditation, the panic would set in. And I finally...
Because you weren't sure you could hear it. Yeah.
I admitted it. I was like, I can't hear. And the way my shoulders dropped down, the relief of that, I was like, wow. Mm. And it was like the first time I said it out loud. And then the teacher started really taking care of me, making sure I make, you know,
right.
And I thought, oh, wait a minute. Oh my God, look how much easier my life could be. So I finally wrote a blog. I had been so ashamed and I was like, I would never wear hearing aids. You know, when I was a kid, right. They were huge and there was such a stigma. And I think there still is.
Yeah.
I wrote this blog, a silly blog. It basically was like, okay, finally I'm over the shame. If only I could afford them. And somebody that took my yoga class read it and got me a pair donated. When I went to the audiologist, I realized, like, first of all, it's like, okay, you have no hearing. And it's way worse now. This was like when I was, you know, 11 years ago now. I mean, I was in my mid-30s when I got hearing aids. But when I went and I realized, you know, I have tinnitus. I have terrible tinnitus, which is ringing all the time. I never do not have it. So going back to that sound I made as a child, it broke me when I realized, oh my God, I've had it my whole life. I was mimicking the sound in my head and I got shamed for it. So I never talked about it. I never said like, hey, does anyone, you know, I just got used to it. And I'll say now, sometimes it still gives me terrible anxiety. I've gotten pretty used to it. It's my threshold for pain is really high. I'm not so proud of that. But part of it is learning how to deal and live with something like, you know, I'm going to shut the door, like tinnitus, you know, because it's maddening, right? It's maddening. Yeah.
It is. But you know what? I mean, like because I've had tinnitus all my life as well. I had, you know, like hearing problems when I was a child. And now I have Meniere's disease, which...
Yeah.
It causes like constant feedback in my ears. Yeah. And like if someone slams a door across the, you know, the other side of the building, I feel it vibrate. And
there are like frequencies that are painful.
I absolutely get it. I mean, I obviously my hearing is not, you know, as affected as yours. But the parallels for me with getting an autism diagnosis, there's two things about like that link deafness and autism. And one is it is like the thing that you don't want to have as a younger person. Like it's not going to go on your dating profile. You know, you're terrified that people won't love you or find you attractive or find you interesting or fun because you've got this, you're burdened with this thing. But the other thing is it affects something that I think is really important to you and I, which is like listening to people and hearing them and conversing with them. And the huge fear for me when I learned I was autistic was that I didn't want people to think that I was not a listener, not like an interactive person.
Because I know, it's awful,
that awful
right?
Stereotype is out there and it's not true. And yeah, it's like that idea that you might be someone who doesn't hear and doesn't listen and isn't fully present in the conversation, which is so important to me. And I found that idea devastating. And it wasn't true. That was a stupid thing. I knew.
You're preaching to the choir because, oh man, we could talk so much about this. This is why I'm excited, you know, to have you in Shame Loss now that we're really getting into this. You know, that was always what people said to me. And I'll tell you what, like the irony now is I've built a career out of listening and I'm really proud of that. Like I'm deaf, small D deaf, different than capital D deaf, which is deaf culture. You know, usually there's no sound. They communicate with ASL and sign language. I've made a career out of listening as a deaf lady. That's really cool. But I've always, you know, I've always been a really good listener. And so the fact that people had that perception of me that either I wasn't a good listener or a snob or entitled or all the things, and people are human. We all do it. We make up stories. I don't present as a deaf person. You know, they don't look at you and think of the, you know, the idea we have of what autism looks like.
No,
right.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. So they're like, she's just elitist or she's just,
Well, arrogant, aloof, like they're the stuff that I used to get when, when actually like my social cues were just different. And it used to just devastate me because I was always the person in the room trying the hardest to be nice and make everyone feel welcome. And like it, and still it was being read as standoffishness and it drove me crazy.
It's hard. And it's like, I was writing this essay yesterday and talking about, again, I feel like you and I have so many overlaps here, but I always felt like I'm on the outside, just slightly, you know? And I still do. I still do, if I'm telling the truth. Not right now, and not when I'm the leader, which is why I'm really fucking good. I am. But when I'm vulnerable, when I'm like in a group, or I'm not. So if I'm the leader, if I'm leading a class, you know, maybe you'll come to my workshop in London, you'll see people share and I will scoot in really close. I won't get too close. I won't touch you, but
we've already had that negotiation.
Yeah. But I know your boundary and I know you're, I'm serious. Like I won't make you uncomfortable.
I have promised you a truly awkward half hug. And I just think that's great. I think you should go with that offer.
No, for sure. But I just mean like, I'm not going to like, I'm going to respect your boundaries. But I have to get in close to hear.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't do that if like you're leading a class. I don't just get up and, you know, but when I'm leading the class, I could do whatever I want. Right. But like in a group dinner or any, like I find myself so often excusing myself or looking at my phone, not because I'm a snob, not because I'm addicted to the phone, which I am, but because I can't keep up. I can't navigate. And it's exhausting. And then the how stupid I feel all the time. Right. What? What are you talking about? You know, and it's exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to do the big social act around making other people feel okay with your disability.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
Like, you have to like feather bed it for them because I can often only, particularly in like busy environments, I can only often hear out of my right ear. So I often have to turn to one side. And I think some people think I'm turning away from them, but I'm not. I'm trying to hear them.
It's funny too, like constantly, the example I always think of is coffee shops, you know, where they're taking your order, you know, and they'll say something and I'll go, they'll say like, what's your name? And I'll say, pardon? And they'll say, what's your name? As if I was just checked out. And I go, and granted, sometimes I go, I say it to kind of go, deaf. And a lot of times I apologize, which I hate, but I'll go, I'm deaf. I read lips. You know, they have a mask on, let's say. And then they go, I'm so sorry. I go, it's okay. You wouldn't know. And then it's this whole like weird apology. Now, I do think there's a lesson that sounds sort of like preachy, but I'm always reminded of just compassion and patience, you know, like we don't know. We don't know. And it's easy to just assume, oh, this person.
It's so true. And you know what, actually, like, I've become more compassionate for understanding how I'm received, actually. Like it makes me often just deliberately stop and think, oh, maybe this person isn't being rude.
Right.
Can I tell you a story that will make you really laugh? Like I did an event the other week, a live event, and it was like living through an anxiety dream. Like check in with all of this and see if it makes you anxious just hearing it, right? So we go online for the sound check. And they say to me, what we want you to do, Catherine, is have one earphone in to listen to the interviewer. And then we want you to have your phone on speaker so we can talk to you at the same time. And I was like, I'm not going to be able to handle that. Like, I'm not going to be able to handle two people talking to me at once. And they were like, well, TV presenters do it. And I was like, yeah, but I'm like not a TV presenter.
Exactly.
And I said, so anyway, won't that feed back? And they were like, no, it won't feed back. And I was like, because if it feeds back, like I have this problem with my ears and it will be really, really painful and I will not be able to deal with it. It won't feed back. Please try it. Turn the phone on. You know, you can just imagine the feedback loop from this it was hideous. So I turned it off and I was like, I can't do this. And they're like, okay, fine. So when we dial in, we won't do it like that. And I guess we'll just have to text you. And, you know, like I felt terrible I had to really assert.
Right, like you failed.
And they were like, the other writer was doing it earlier. And I was like, it was really dreadful. They were being so nice, but they didn't realise it was mean. You know, they were, anyway. So we log on later. And they immediately text, say, can you put your speakerphone on? I was like, no, I can't. We've already agreed. We'll try and text you stuff. I was like, okay. Got 20 minutes into the interview and their end internet started cutting out. And for the final 25 minutes of the live broadcast, I had to just present alone with them texting, going, keep going, it's fine. Is that not like an anxiety dream that's come?
Yeah, that literally is like my dream every night of like, I'm still in school failing my math test or I'm going, yeah, total.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So I'm just pausing mid-podcast to tell you a bit about my new Patreon, which I'm really excited to launch. I've been trying to think for a long time how to make this podcast sustainable. And this will really, really help us to keep making more episodes. I am always telling other people how it's really good to let everyone else help them. And so I guess I'm taking a bit of my own medicine here. The brilliant thing that the Patreon feed lets me do is to make an extra special bonus episode just for subscribers once a month, which will go out on the Patreon feed. And in that, you'll get a bit more of me. If you're sick of the sound of my voice, then maybe this isn't for you. But if you're not, then I'll be talking about the things that are inspiring me at the moment, the books I'm reading, the culture I'm absorbing, the news stories, everything that I'm taking in, I'm going to share with you on that. It'll be really chatty and fun. But I'll also be inviting questions from the Patreon community that I'll answer in the podcast. So it'll give you the chance to, I don't know, tell me stuff, ask me questions, give me problems to solve, see if I can help. I'm a bit of an advice giver. It's maybe not my most endearing quality, but some people seem to like it. The other amazing opportunity for my Patreon community will be that you'll be able to ask questions of my guests in advance. And you'll receive the answers to those questions in a special subscriber-only version of the podcast that's extended to include the Q&A. So it's going to feel really, really exclusive and cool, and you'll be able to get your voice into the podcast, which will be really amazing. You'll get the podcast a day early, and it will always be ad-free. I haven't added ads yet to the widely available version of the podcast, but you know, I may well do in the future. But your version as Patreon subscriber will always, always be ad-free. And there'll be special discounts on my courses and events, early booking links, chances to get signed copies of my books, all kinds of like special community bonuses for the people who have, you know, already hugely supported my work. It's my chance to give you some extras. So in return, I also get help from you with the costs of producing and transcribing and administering this podcast, which I love doing, but it's quite difficult to keep it up sometimes. So I'd love your help if you can afford to. If you can't, don't worry. It will always be the same podcast available free wherever you get it right now. And you should not feel bad about that. That's absolutely fine. But for the first month that the Patreon is open, I'm going to be offering a year's subscription for half price. So just £2.50 in UK money a month for the first year of your membership. It will only be for that first month. After that, it will revert to full cost, which is £5 a month.
So if you're keen, get in early and help me to get this going. And I will be letting you know straight away about the first bonus episode, which is due very soon, and also the chance to ask questions of my next crop of guests. Thank you for all your support so far. I love it. I love talking to you all, and I love your enthusiasm. And now, back to Jen.
I mean, I'm thinking of like different things I've done, you know, with photo shoots or anything where I can't hear them if they're over there or if the camera's, you know, and then I panic and it's just all I know now is and this can be exhausting too. But what I say is I lead with the thing that caused me shame. And I don't mean that everyone has to tell everyone everything. I think that's a bullshit, No, but I won't hide anymore. So as much as I can, I will immediately disclose that. Oh, I read lips. You know, it just saves me. It's purely like, first of all, it's so much less anxiety inducing for me than pretending I can keep up.
Yeah.
Faking it, seeing how long you can keep up the fake act. Of
yes. And then it's like it gives the other person could be more aware to like look. It just... And then I take all the story away. There's no story. It just is what it is. I read lips and deaf without, you know, and, you know, where before it was just so much shame around it. And now I'm like right there. Mm. Now it does get exhausting. It's like every single moment of every day. It's like constantly being like, I'm, you know, but you know how it is. It is. It is like everyone has something. Yeah, it's exhausting. And I'm tired all the time from working so hard to hear, which is why I'm grateful for these new hearing aids. They're a lot louder, some a bit too loud, in fact. But the constant effort of trying to hear.
Yeah, it's exhausting. It must be exhausting.
And not only that, because a lot of times it's not even that I can actually hear, but I can, after a moment, it lands in my head and contextually I can put it together. So it's like it's like puzzles, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's so interesting to talk about this and talk about the fear of like not being loved or liked or accepted or heard or, you know, all of those things. And it strikes me that, you know, as well as your kind of movement for shame loss, which I'm absolutely right behind, but you also talk a lot about holding other people. You know, your tattoo... which I got you, right? Is that right? I got you. There is. Are you going to show me? Can I see? Can I see it out? Yay, there is.
The only one I have. Yep.
Can we talk a bit about that? I'm really interested in that because I'm interested in, I don't know, like the interconnectedness that that represents.
But can I tell you about, something?
Like, yeah.
You know, I talk about, it's funny because I was a little bit late for you because I'm on an app called Mind. So everyone listening, it's MIND. And it's like a self-help app. There's all these different people that do videos and it's just great. I talk about, you know, it's about embodying that energy and you embody that. Like I think about how a couple things about you that I really like, you know, that I love. You're so obviously like you want me to win, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's I got you, right? Mm. And I think about a couple of weeks ago, whenever that was, when I was working on my new book proposal and I sent you some stuff. And like right away, you were like, here, boom, you helped me with it. There was no, just completely like, I got you, Jen. You didn't say that, but that's what you were being. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what you were being, you know?
Well, helping is a privilege, isn't it? It's a privilege to help people.
Well, absolutely. I think so too. And I mean, I think there's so many layers though. I think... First of all, having a parent, you know, yanked away so young, it makes sense that I have a bullshit story, as I call it, that there's not enough, right? And that, I don't know, when I was a kid, I thought God hated me, which is so sad. I know. I mean, my son's five. And last night, you know, he was like, I miss daddy. And it kills me because my sister was five when my dad died. And I think like it's so, the not enoughness was a place I came from for most of my life. Everything was from a place of lack. And when I started like, you know, as a every day putting that belief down and doing things that reinforce the opposite, such as there is enough. So if anyone follows me on social media, let's say, one of the things I'm really good at and I do a lot is support other people, promote other people, lift other people up. And I do that. I do that for them, but also for me, to remind myself there is enough. You don't have to hold on to the bullshit story that there's not. You know, just because Catherine's book is a success or this or that, or doesn't mean, you know. And that is like, I got you. It's the reminder that there's enough and that we're supported. You know, there also is a tendency, I think, for a lot of people to be like, no one has me and I'm not, you know, and it's bullshit. It doesn't, it can be one person. It could be a bunch of people. And I think, you know, the other thing is when we allow ourselves to be supported, we realize, and I'm really good at asking for help. I just gave a talk on that and I get a ton of yeses and I get a ton of no's, friends listening. And the thing is, I don't let that shut me down, or I let it shut me down for a short period of time, as opposed to going, well, they said no, I'm worthless, I'm never going to ask again, I'm going to stop writing, I'm going to, I go, all right. And I, you know, and we ask for help and we allow ourselves to be supported, you know, and it's about reciprocity and how I got you can look so many different ways. So for example, in the beginning of the pandemic, when I had kind of a breakdown because I lost all my work, my income, and I'm the breadwinner. I turned Instagram and I was like, I did a post that said, do you have enough food to eat? This was before you followed me. I guess I said, do you have enough food to eat? And it wasn't because I thought like, I'm going to buy everybody groceries. You know, I didn't have any money. And to be clear, full disclosure, I've lived in my apartment 19 years and my rent is very cheap. I'm very blessed. So my overhead was low. So I lost everything. And thank God I lived in a dorm room. Thank God I lived in a 500 square foot rent control apartment. Okay. So I posted your food to eat because I knew that not that I would like personally feed all the people, but this community I'd cultivated, this energy of I got you, that they would step in. And that's exactly what happened. So someone would be like, I lost my job. Blah, blah, blah. Another person would send money or groceries. And this started happening. And then I stepped in and this other woman helped me. And we were like, let's do this. And basically I created a movement and we raised $150,000 to get people groceries and feed people. And I was doing Instagram lives and raising money. And that was, I got you. And it wasn't necessarily me pulling money out of my pocket. It was me. Yeah. I have a platform. I hate that word, but like I got you can look like so many different things. It can look like what you did helping me with the writing. It can look like, you know, checking in on someone. It can look like listening. It can look like giving your elderly neighbor a ride. It can look like whatever, right?
And it's often tiny, just letting people feel cared for. But can I ask about the opposite of that? Because actually, boundaries have to come in at some point as well. And that's something that I find very, very hard because like I always want to help everybody.
I love find this.
Like I'm always having to find ways to remind myself to stop because otherwise I get completely burnt out. And you know, like when you write a book like The Electricity of Every Living Thing, people read it and they realize they're autistic just the same as I did. And I'm the person they want to come to. And I can't help everybody on their individual journey on that. And I find that really painful because I would deeply love to. I'd like to like physically walk every single person through that journey and hug them as virtually or not virtually as they want. But I can't. And I find that really hard. How do you cope with the boundary setting that you must have to do at the other side?
I find it hard and I get lectured by a lot of my friends, especially my friends who aren't as open as I am. They're like, Jennifer, I've gotten a lot better. I've gotten a lot better since I have a kid. And I know you understand that, right? I've gotten a lot better at it because of experience and like just going, I'm completely depleted. I find it really, really hard. And, you know, especially after my book came out, then it became even greater. But
yeah, it's exponential, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because more people than knew my book. And think about this. My tagline, right, is I got you. So anytime then I can't, it's like, yeah, but you're the I got you lady. I mean, okay, so. And then also consider the fact that I've developed a reputation as like, you need money? Ask Jen. She raises money. You know? So think about those two things, right? It's really hard. And I can't help everyone. And so I'm really discerning. And I also am really clear now that sometimes I got you the way that my I got you looks is like you can sign up for my retreat or my workshop or my yoga class or read my book. I can't be best friends with everyone. I can't, you know, So I Got You is within boundaries, and it looks different for every single person. The session I just did actually was called On Having Your Own Back. And I think having boundaries is about that, right? Like, so going, so me having my own back is knowing I can say no to someone and the world won't collapse. It doesn't mean that everyone will hate me just because one person may be disappointed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No, we absolutely cannot help everyone. And I struggle with that, like nobody's business. But I'm really, really clear that also I Got You cannot be a manipulation. Like, people cannot like use that at me, you know, or like I'll say, don't apologize, you know. And what I mean is, don't apologize for taking up space. Don't apologize for having autism. Don't apologize. Yeah, apologize if you're a jerk.
Yeah, yeah. There are some definitely some things some people should apologize for.
Absolutely. Like, let's be really clear on that. But people go, well, Jen, you said never to apologize. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. No.
Yeah.
The art of apologizing is really important. But, you know, you don't apologize for like, you know, being you or for asking for salad dressing. But yeah, right. Women, like I used to wait tables. I'm sorry. Can I get salad dressing? I think, you know, having boundaries and being able to know that we can't help everyone. I can't raise money for everyone. I can't say yes to everyone. I can't blurb everybody's book. But like, you know, shame loss is a way of I Got You. And me sharing of myself without hiding anymore, I think is a way of I Got You, because yeah, it can help someone else who maybe is ashamed and terrified of their own depression or hearing loss, you know?
Yeah. And I think a lot about how, I mean, like whenever I see your tattoo, I think how it's a message to yourself as well. Like I've got your back too. Like I've got my own back. I'm going to look after myself too. Because we can't help if we're not well cared for in the first place.
And I want to model that behavior. It's important to me to have role model behavior. And I don't always, I'm human, you know, but it's important to me. And that's why, like, recently, especially this month, I'm really proud of myself because I've been doing that. I've been keeping commitments to myself. I've been saying no more. I've been modeling what it looks like to say I got you to myself instead of just everybody else.
Yeah. And that's been like the huge transformation in my life is like keeping acres of my diary free, because it turns out that's what I need to stay well. I mean, it's not like a luxury. It's really
Shame.
Survival for me. Shame. And I was shortening my life. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And I can help as much as I can help, but I can't always help personally. And so I do stuff like have a podcast, you know, like that's often the best way that I can help.
I think it took me until my mid-40s. And so I think, oh, maybe someone listening's 30 and they're going to get it a little younger. And I don't regret anything. I mean, that's a fib. I do. I regret saying I hate you as the last thing to my dad. And I sort of regret not getting my degree from NYU. But, you know, I try to have a life with as little regrets as possible. I don't regret anything. I am where I am right now. It's beautiful. But like, man, had I gotten here a little younger, it would have saved me a lot of grief, right? Like not trying to please everyone all the time and worry that they're going to like me and all that exhausting nonsense. So yeah, I Got You is, but I just think it's a beautiful way to be. And I think we're so, you know, I love community. I don't know about God. That's where I find God and connection. And it doesn't even have to be like a lot of people necessary, but deep connection. That's God to me. So, I got you is everything.
It's lovely. It's such a beautiful phrase. And it doesn't really work like in my English accent. It works much better in your accent.
There's so many things like that. I don't know. It does work.
I've got you.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, because it's like you're proper. You know, my mother-in-law, like she would say, I've got you. Charlie. Yeah, she's coming for the first time in 2 years. We haven't seen her in 2 years.
Oh, wow.
I know. Like since I bought a house. So, you know, she'd always stay with us in our one bedroom on our sofa. And so it's going to be like a whole, you know, talk about wintering. I'm in a small town now. I mean, I imagine my life is, you're near the water. I'm about 12 miles from the water. But it's a similar, just cozy kind of like energetic. I feel really good here in my body. I think that's how you are where you live, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the right place for me.
Yeah. So I bought a house, you know, which I've kept kind of a bit quiet, and it's in my happy place where I've been leading retreats forever. And I never allow myself to, first of all, fantasize that I'd own a house or even really leave my apartment, which is depressing when I think about it, just how small I kept myself because of fear. And I always was like, this is my happy place. Like maybe one day I'll have a weekend home there. Right. I never imagined like living here full time. Now, I can't imagine anything else. It's the best thing I've ever done besides having my son.
Yeah.
I do not miss LA. And I think about your book a lot because it feels like wintering. I feel like I'm like nesting and like...
The good parts.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, like my street doesn't have street lights. It's dark and like you could see the stars. And I just feel really connected to the earth, and I feel grounded and comfortable, and like I don't want to travel as much. You know, there's like,
you just want to be home.
Yes
You find your place. Oh, that's so lovely. So before we go, I want to ask you finally about inner assholes. Another thing that doesn't sound as good in my accent.
No, it sounds better when you say it, asshole.
No we elongate it too much, you know. It's like it's too... Yeah, our asshole. It's like it becomes too much about the arse rather than anything else. Anyway, but I want to ask you finally about, because you do yoga to quiet the inner asshole, and I love that concept. But can you share with the listeners who the inner asshole is and what we do about them?
Well, first of all, I think I'm not in your mind, but I think everyone has one. And let's talk about seasons, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
There are seasons of our life where the inner asshole runs the show. There are seasons of our life, days where it's quieter, sometimes it's louder, and it depends, right? Like, I think I'm going through perimenopause, right? So hormones are wacky and my inner a-hole is louder. You know, when you're tired, when you're not sleeping, when you're hungover, when you've just been rejected, your inner asshole is going to be louder. I think the work of our lives is, and this is a really fairly recent epiphany. It's not, I've always been like, huh, okay, that's my inner asshole. Examples of things it said, like, you're not a real writer, Jen. Or I don't know, like, you'll always, you know, you're always going to be broke. Just things that your inner asshole says that I don't tend to use words like negative or positive. They're so binary, but like things that open you up rather than things that shut you down. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think recently I realized, oh, so it's not just about quieting the inner asshole. Well, I used to think it was killing it. And I go, oh, no.
It's quite violent.
Well, yeah, but not only that, then you wake up, it's in a bed with you again. You're like, okay, I guess I didn't kill it. So let's quiet it so that it's not actually the loudest voice. So I realized recently it's about offering it compassion. So it's like, okay, I see you, I get you, and I don't need you. Not today, Satan. Because I think ultimately the inner asshole, whatever it's saying to us, you know, and this is very like, probably psychology 101, but is like trying to protect us, right? So the inner asshole is like, you know, you should be quiet, or, you know, because it thinks it's like we're going to get hurt. And so we offer compassion, go, I don't need you, not today. And it's every single day, because I don't think it's like, well, I got rid of my inner asshole, it's never coming back, because something will trigger it, right?
Yeah.
It's always going to be a practice. Like, it's like so many things, like we can't solve this, like you can't kill it, but you can learn to live with it in a way that's a bit more constructive than many of us have experienced. Yeah.
And I'd say the biggest thing for me these days is levity and humor. You know, I think life is hard, and like we take ourselves so seriously, and the world is shit, and like so if you can't laugh and have a sense of humor about things, you're screwed. So like I'm always like, find the funny and the levity, and especially with the things our inner asshole says, like, start to laugh at them, like laugh at the ridiculousness of it.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I mean, like in a, you know, sorry, this is probably a bit darker than we were, but I used to have a lot of suicidal thoughts as a teenager and into my 20s. And I learned to live with those by mocking them. Like, that was the only thing.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, Catherine. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
It was like this little voice that didn't know when to shut up. And I realized it was a habit rather than anything very...
Boom, boom.
Real.
Boom, you know? You just hit the nail on the head. Boom.
I learned to say, like, oh, there you are again. Of course you're going to pipe up. You know?
and like I'll ask people when they, you know, because I coach people less these days, you know, I'm really discerning. But one of the things, you know, I ask them a bunch of questions, like, and I say, you don't have to answer all of them, but I just want to get a feel, you know, what are some of the things your inner asshole says to you? You know, what are some bullshit stories you want to work on? Does your inner asshole have a name? And usually I ask that because I think it makes people laugh, but it makes them personify it a bit.
My friend
Marley Grace calls hers Roger.
That is the perfect name for an asshole, incidentally.
I know it is. It's so funny. But you hit the nail on the head with the habits. And that's why, you know, with my next book, I'm talking about daily practices. Because that, when I had that breakdown in the beginning of COVID and the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, how did I get here again? I've done all this work and I wrote a best-selling book and blah, blah. Because it's about daily practices. It's not like you kill the inner asshole and that's it. It's not like you reach enlightenment and that's it. It's not like you get happy and that's it. It just doesn't work that way. It's like, what are you doing every day to shift the habit, to put down the shame, to quiet the inner asshole, to, you know, whether it's meditation, whether it's whatever it is. But every single day, the habits that we create, and they can be really hard to break, these patterns.
And I like it. It's so, once you start paying attention to them and you notice their behavior, it's quite shocking the idiot stuff they say to you. I mean, honestly, like mine would pipe up, like I'd had a, you know, slightly snappy interaction with somebody serving me coffee and it would be like, you're worthless, you know. And after a while, I started to notice it and think, are you kidding me? Like someone was rude to me in Starbucks. That does not count as worthless. And it's so interesting.
I think, you know,
consciousness to it.
Again, I'm in my 40s and I'm like, man, if only it was like this in my 20s, because I would have been, I'm this, you know, so sensitive. Like if someone's mean to me or whatever, it's like, oh my God, I'm like, I don't even deserve to be a person. And a lot of that is because I had that narrative of I'm a bad person. And so I'd look for, you know, validation anywhere. And it makes sense for you. Like, think about like, you didn't have your diagnosis. You're like trying to figure out your, like, where do I fit in? Who am I? How am I? How come I'm not like everyone else?
Yeah. And your experience is often of interactions going wrong. Like there's some research now into autistic people that like our timing is different to, like our conversational timing is different to neurotypical people. And the way you experience that is interactions failing over and over again. And, you know, you can really take it to heart. Of course you can. But having that self-knowledge just really helps to be able to say, oh, that went wrong again. Like that's all you have to say about it. Like that interaction went wrong.
It makes me want to cry though, because I, you know, having this conversation with you, I didn't know this was, I mean, we had no idea where this was going to go today, but the overlaps, you know, so I am excited about the shame loss thing because, you know, I have that same experience all the time. And especially before I started being honest, you know, about my hearing loss, but and I remember when I finally started like telling people, especially at the restaurant when I was waiting tables, this was the reaction I got. That makes sense. Or, we thought you were just an error. You know,
I hate that.
I know. But I realized like, you know, how I was occurring to people. Holy shit. Yeah. And it's like you said, it's the exact opposite of how I wanted to occur. No, I'm someone who pays attention. I'm, you know, and I was like occurring like, it's just because I couldn't hear.
and that's such a simple thing. Like so much shame unpacks from it on your side and so much judgment on the other side because of, you know, and that would be because of their shame and their anxiety about who they are and how they're received, right? And that becomes this big ball of horrible shit.
Yeah, so how can we together, you and I together, we're going to, you know, it's going to be really beautiful. And I think like a huge way that I've discovered is just talking about it, is naming it, right? Yeah. It really is. It's like, it's like why I lead with the thing that caused me shame. Because once we talk about it, it's like, oh, it's not so big, bad and scary anymore. And it's less awkward. And we realize we're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's so daft.
It's wonderful. And like maybe one day, maybe not, we can make art from it or something, right?
That's what we do. We've already made art from it.
I know.
Quite pleased with that. Jen, thank you. It's been so amazing to talk to you. I just, Oh, I feel like we could talk for 3 hours, and I need to. Well, we will. I need to
I
not do that.
Wait to be with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a little bummed you don't watch TV because I'm obsessed with this show right now, and I wanted to talk to you about it. Damn, you!
I don't mean to not watch TV, but I don't.
I can't
imagine when people get the time. Like,
it's the only way I get myself to exercise on my silly elliptical.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's wise.
I watch it because otherwise, I can't, it's depressing just to like be on there. You know. It's not like walking in nature is different, you know, but like just being on the machine. Yeah. Anyway, there's a show called Borgen. It's Danish. It's political. But all the shows I love are like British and like take place around where you live. And so, I'm always like, oh, we're going to talk about our British shows. But no.
I'm so hopeless. Yeah, no, I am really hopeless. I've now missed so many major TV series that everyone loves that I've given up.
My friend, streaming. Look, you can
I can't catch up. I can't catch up. It's too late.
You don't need to catch up.
It's too late for me. You have to leave me behind.
So I'm excited to be with you in London and Nigella, which is random. And you asked me how we connected. I said Instagram, where I've made a lot of my friends. And she's just lovely and I love her. And so I was like, I won't make you cook for us. She's like, I quite enjoy it. I was like, great then. So, but I can't wait to be with you in person. And I haven't been there in 2 years. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, my mother-in-law lives there and my brother-in-law, and I have so many friends, and I'm really looking forward to being there. And especially in the winter, you know, we don't really get winter here. So we'll winter together.
You will be midwinter. It will be the grimmest, kind of shortest, miserablest days.
I love it.
Thank you, you lovely person. It has been so great to talk to you.
I look forward to meeting you in person. I can't wait to be with you. It's going to be the blink of an eye.
I know. It's going to be really soon. Christmas first and then that.
Tide's coming in. I don't know if you'll be able to hear it, but I can. It changes noise when it turns round. You start to hear it coming back towards you. I love that sound. The seagulls seem to be calming down a bit, for which we can all be thankful. We're only, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks away from midwinter now, from the moment when the days stop getting shorter and start getting longer again. I started marking it for the first time when I wrote Wintering, and I've done it ever since. Can't wait to do it this year. It's normally around the 21st of December. I get out onto the beach because actually I get a really brilliant view of the sunset in Whitstable. And I just spend some time out there. I light a fire, have a couple of friends who join us, but it's a quiet affair. It's not a party. I only want to be with people who are happy to fall into quiet contemplation at those moments. And you know, we light our fire, we watch the sun go down, and we notice how far the sun has travelled across the sky. It's really remarkable. I never realised it even happened. So we watch it set over the marshes at Seasalter and just enjoy that feeling of change coming through the year. I try and get up early the next morning before the sun rises. I'm normally up before sunrise anyway in the winter, but I try and make sure I'm outside for the sunrise as well. And that's a moment that I like to spend on my own. I sometimes light a little candle out there. I like a candle. Sometimes it's that opportunity to feel change happening, to feel those transitions, just to sense them. They're really important to me. Anyway, I don't know if any of you celebrate midwinter. I'd love to hear if you do. Do tell me. So that's quite enough midwinter rambling from me. I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Jen for such a wonderful conversation. I loved talking to her. I always feel like I want to spend hours in her company yelling stuff at each other. I love those kind of conversations where your voices overlap because you're so excited to talk to each other. If you, like me, think she is a wonderful, warm, wise soul, do pick up her book. It's great, On Being Human. available everywhere. It's just so open and vulnerable, full of things that you can't stop yourself relating to so hard. And just full of wisdom too. She has this way of spinning out phrases that are massively memorable and comforting. I think you'll love it. Do check it out. And thanks to my producer, Buddy Pearce, who also composes the theme tune to this podcast. I feel really lucky to have a bespoke theme tune. It's ridiculous, isn't it? How cool am I? Brackets, not very cool. Buddy is. So he does that. Thank you, Buddy. And thank you to Megan Hutchins, who holds everything together, not just for the podcast, but for most of my life. And I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Do check out that Patreon page. Do have a look in the show notes to connect up with Jen. And keep warm and well. See you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.